I welcome everyone, especially my dear godbrother Sarvabhauma Prabhu, who has come all the way from England. And also we have special guests, some very wonderful ladies who were on a cruise on a boat, and somehow they have cruised into our temple on this very auspicious occasion. Let us very enthusiastically welcome them to our temple. Shall I tell you what you cruised into? We are celebrating one of the most beautiful festivals of the year tonight. It is Ram Navami, the day when the Supreme Lord appeared in his incarnation of Lord Rama. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyuta nama dharmasya tadatmanam srijam yaham. There is one God for all living beings, and that one Lord is all-pervading, is inconceivable, is all-powerful, all-loving, all-merciful, all-attractive, is the father and the mother of every living entity in all of existence, is the cause of all causes, the origin of everyone and everything. And throughout history, that Lord appears within the world we live from time to time. This is historically recorded in the various great scriptures of the world. And it is explained exhaustively in the Vedic literatures. The purpose of the Lord's descent from his own eternal, all-blissful abode into this world is given in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Paritranaya sadunam vinashaya chaduskritam dharma samstapanaradaya sambhavami juge juge. The Lord comes to annihilate misconceptions and demoniac mentality. Comes to reestablish the principles of religion and to protect and attract the hearts of the pious. On this auspicious day, long ago, the Lord manifested himself on earth as Lord Rama. Rama means the reservoir of all pleasure. Everyone is seeking pleasure. And everyone is trying to find relief from pain, which is simply an obstruction from pleasure. It is the inherent nature of every living being. Anandamayo Vyashat. We are pleasure seeking. Whether we're insects or reptiles or fish, birds, animals, human beings, whether we're black or white or red or yellow, or man or woman, or Eastern or Western, everyone seeks pleasure. Why? The scriptures tell us it is because we are part of God. Every living being is a part of the Lord. That is our essence. And the Lord is Rama, the reservoir of all pleasure. We are seeking that pleasure. The basis of pleasure is love. Everyone needs it. No one can be satisfied without it, whatever other adjustments they make in life. Without love, we are lonely, we are empty. Real religion teaches perfect love. The love of the mind, the love of the senses, are temporary reflections of real love. Real love is the expression of the eternal soul, who we really are, not who we think we are. The soul's craving is to love God. And therefore the Lord appears within this world to teach us how to love God. Lord Rama, especially taught not only by his own words, but by his living example. Although he is the supreme, all-powerful creator of everything and everyone, and at times he revealed that potency, in general, he acted like a human being. Why? To teach us how to be human beings. By his own example. Srila Prabhupada gives an example. When a teacher in an elementary school is giving lessons in the alphabet, teaches, this is how you make an A. And she draws one diagonal line and then another diagonal line in the other direction and then puts a line in between them. This is how you draw a B. So she's going through the lesson. She doesn't need to go through the lesson. She knows the lesson. But she's personally showing us how to do it for our benefit. So the Lord comes to this world to teach us by his example the virtues, the characteristics that make a human being saintly, not only in the eyes of pure-hearted people, but in the eyes of God. Now, no one is a controller in this world. We are all subjected to situations beyond our own ability to control. Whether it be the dealings of other people, or our own minds, or environmental circumstances, disease, old age, the powers of time. How to maintain spiritual dignity and good character even in such confrontational situations? Traditionally, when a man and woman are married, they take a vow. I don't remember the exact words because I never got married. So it's all quite theoretical for me. That in good or bad, in happiness or distress, in success or failure, to death do we part. In other words, to show love to another living being is something that takes commitment. Just to love each other when I like you and you like me and everything feels good and everything's favorable, that's just mutual pleasure. But love is something much deeper, even in this world. But when there are so many impediments coming about in our relationship, from the environment, from our own egoistic differences and everything else, are we committed to each other? Not for my pleasure, for your pleasure. That is love. Love is in giving. It is not in taking. Lord Ram orchestrated his lila, or his pastimes, so that inconceivable difficulties came in his life, just so that he could teach us how to act when difficulties come in our life. How kind is the Lord! He's willing to accept all that upon himself for our sake. So most of us know the story very well, but I will focus on one particular section of Valmiki Ramayana just to illustrate how this virtue has been illuminated. Ram appeared within this world along with three brothers, Bharat, Lakshman, and Shatrughna. In the holy city of Ayodhya, together the boys lived in perfect unity and affection throughout their childhood and their teenage years, under the protection of the king, Dasarath, and his three wives, Sumitra, Kausalya, and Kaikeyi. And everyone loved Ram more than their own lives. Why? Because he loved everyone more than his own life. Love attracts love. Ram had such infinite love for every living being within that kingdom that they naturally reciprocated, spontaneous, with love for him. They all awaited the day when he would be coronated as the prince regent who would be the next king. Announcement was made that it would take place the next day. Bharat, the second brother, was out of town with Shatrughna. The whole kingdom was celebrating. But then Mantara, she was empowered by higher forces to succumb to envy. When envy enters the heart, even our best well-wishers can become our enemies. It is the grossest and the most detrimental of any quality. It could ruin all our good qualities, like fire can burn down an entire forest. Therefore, Krishna tells in Gita, Arjuna, you can understand my teachings because you have no envy in your heart. Kaikeyi loved Ram more than anything. But Mantara convinced her, the reason why your husband wants to coronate Ram as king is going to destroy you and your son's life. Because Ram knows that your son, Bharat, is superior to him. He will see him as competition. And ultimately, he will exile him and you for life. And you'll lose everything. So be intelligent. Don't allow this to happen. Your husband gave you two boons long ago when you helped him in a time of need. Take those two boons tonight. To exile Ram to the forest for 14 years and to coronate Bharat, your son, as the next king. This shows how association can affect a person's life. It's very important who we associate with, because we are all very deeply influenced by our company. Here is a saintly, loving woman who is becoming more envious than a venomous snake. A caring, loving wife and mother who is now willing to murder her own husband through emotional blackmail. And cause utter grief to the entire kingdom. This is the nature of envy, selfishness. For our own purpose, we simply lose the consideration of how our actions or words are affecting everyone or anyone else. A great personality is willing to make sacrifices in their own lives for the welfare of others. Whereas other people are willing to sacrifice the happiness, the peace of mind, the benefits of so many others for me. Krishna tells in Gita, those who are on the spiritual path and those who are on the material path, it is like night and day. What is the time of an awakening for a spiritual-minded person is the time to sleep for a selfish person, and vice versa. Kaikeyi laid on her floor, weeping in a state of disarray to bring about the sympathy of her husband, the king. He said, I'll do anything for you, my wife. I'll do anything. What would you like? Do you vow you'll do whatever I say? He said, of course. Banish Ram tomorrow to the forest for 14 years and coronate my son as king. He fell to the ground, unconscious. He could not believe what he was hearing from someone he loved and trusted with his whole heart. How has this happened to you? He couldn't believe what he was hearing. He was in a puddle of emotional agony. And she just stood over him and demanded that. The next morning, Ram came in the room to take the blessings for his coronation. And he saw his father in that condition. What's happened to you? Father could not speak. Kaikeyi told him, "This is what your father has vowed today." Lord Ram, he showed no regret, no fear. With folded palms and eyes glazed with compassion, he said, "My dear father, don't be in distress. If this is your will, then I will happily go to the forest for the next 14 years. And Bharat, he will make a great king. He will be a wonderful king. He's more qualified. Now, with your permission, I will leave." Of course, Lakshman and Sita, they pleaded that they go with him. Sita is the very emblem of faithfulness, chastity, loyalty, and perfect love and devotion. When Ram told Sita, "You are a princess, how will you live outside of a beautiful palace, laying on the cold ground of the jungle?" "All your life you've been eating the finest royal foods. In the jungle, you'll never taste any cooked food. Only the roots, the herbs from the ground, and whatever fruit falls from the trees. You dress in the finest silks with elegant ornaments. But if you come with me, your only clothing will be the bark of trees. And there will be snakes and mosquitoes and carnivorous animals, as well as rakshasas, bloodthirsty demons who live throughout the jungles of today." Sita does not even reconsider. This is love. To be with you in the jungle, to be with you in hell, would be better than heaven. But to be without you in heaven would be more painful than hell. I must come. Ram accepted. And for Lakshman, there was not even a question of argument. "I am your younger brother. I will be at your side. Wherever you are, that's my life." It's a beautiful story about their departure from Ayodhya. But soon after, Dasarath, the king, was in so much agony thinking of his son living in the forest, that he died. Now there was no king. Bharat returned. The whole Ayodhya was like a ghost town. There was no joy. There was no life. Everything was dismal and dirty and depressed. He didn't understand what's happening. He went to his mother. "What am I seeing?" And she was smiling lit up with joy. I did it for you, my son. I did it for you. What did you do? I had your father exile Ram for 14 years so that you could be the king. Well, where is my father? How could he have allowed you to do this? Where is he? He died in separation of Ram. Bharat was furious. I will never allow this deceitful plot of yours to ever be fulfilled. You are not my mother. You are my enemy. You are the enemy of all humankind. I reject you. He went to Kausalya, Ram's mother, to share her sorrow. Kausalya looked at him and said, "Oh, Bharat, your wish is fulfilled. My son is in the forest. Now you be king. But I don't know how you'll be happy as king, knowing that your own brother, who loved you more than his own life, is suffering in the jungle because of you." Bharat fell to his knees. "I knew nothing about this. I'm going to go to the forest and I'm going to beg Ram to return." Anyways, the last rites were performed for Dasarath. And Vasishtha Muni, the priest, he told Bharat, "There has to be a king. Let us coronate you now." Bharat said, "I will never in my life ever sit on that throne. It belongs to my brother Ram. I will go to the forest. Let us take our entire army and all of our priests and the holy mothers, and let us beg Ram to return. And I will sit in the forest for 14 years and take that exile." Everyone in the kingdom rejoiced when they heard Bharat speak these words. It took about a month for them to make a road by which the armies and the leaders of the kingdom could have a procession through the forest. And they proceeded. They met Maharaj Guha on the way. He was a forest-dwelling king of the Nishada race, who by the general society are considered like outcasts because they're living in the jungles in a very, very primitive situation. But when Maharaj Guha saw Ram, with so much love, he offered his entire kingdom. When he heard that Ram was exiled, he offered Ram his house. Ram said, "No, exile means I can never sleep in any proper building. Just put some grass on the ground and I will sleep there." He brought some delicious cooked foods. Ram said, "No, I must honor my father. For the next 14 years, only roots and herbs raw." Maharaj Guha brought some fine clothes. Ram said, "No, to honor my father, I can only wear tree bark." Maharaj Guha wept. But then he helped him across the river Ganges the next morning. When Bharat came with all these armies, Guha saw him coming. And he was thinking, here is this Bharat. What is his motive with all these armies? He must know that after 14 years, Rama is going to come back for his kingdom. So he's coming when Rama is all alone with only a brother and wife with all these armies to kill him. So that there could never be any impediment to his sovereignty. But when Bharat understood that this thought was in Guha's heart, he was broken to pieces and explained his real ambition. So Maharaj Guha said, I will come with you to find Ram and bring him back to Ayodhya. And they came to Prayag, where Bhardwaj Muni was living. Bhardwaj Muni was worshipped and honored by Lord Ram because he's a great sage and Brahmin. When he saw Bharat coming, he personally asked him, are you coming to do harm to Ram? To extinguish all future competition? Is that your motive? Bharat fell crying, how could anyone suspect this of me? He told his real intention. Bhardwaj Muni said, I already knew that, but I wanted to test you. And he told him that Rama is living at Chitrakoot Mountain, just 20 miles from here. When Bharat was coming, where Ram was living, in a little hermitage, Lakshman, his brother, made a hut out of straw and grass for Ram and Sita to sleep in. And he would stand outside all night and guard. That was his faith and devotion. It was such a peaceful life. Chitrakoot was an area where the Mandakini Ganga is flowing. A beautiful flowing body of water with lotus flowers. And on the banks are great, great yogis and sages with pure hearts who are performing the fire sacrifices, worshiping the Lord, chanting sacred mantras. They worshipped Ram because they understood his real identity. But Ram, to show the example for others, he and Sita, the goddess of fortune, and Lakshman, would bow at their feet, render menial services for them, and sit in appeal to them to enlighten them with divine words. Ram told Sita, I have never been happier in my whole life than this exile. All the big responsibilities and the opulences of Ayodhya, it was very nice. But here in this beautiful forest and the company of sages, in the presence of your beauty, I've never been happier. And I could never be happier. He saw the exile as a blessing. And Sita felt the same way. But one day they heard the rumbling of chariots and the sound of a military approaching through the forest. Ram told Lakshman, see what it is. He climbed a big tree and looked down. And what did he see? He saw a procession of 9,000 elephants, 60,000 chariots, and 100,000 infantry coming through the forest. He was trying to understand, who is this? And he saw near the front, on a flag, there was the Kodivara tree, which was the emblem of Bharat, his brother. Lakshman trembled with rage. He said to Ram, Bharat is coming. He's not satisfied that you're banished for 14 years. Now he's coming with an entire army to destroy us so that we can never come back and take his throne away from him. And Lakshman, who is Balaram himself, the wrath in his eyes were capable of burning that entire army to ashes. He said, I will destroy Bharat and his entire army single-handedly today with my bows and arrows. Ram chastised Lakshman. Don't you ever think like that about your brother. Do you not know the purity of his heart? Bharat loves me as much as you love me. Envy, pride, greed can never exist in the heart of such a great soul as our brother Bharat. Please know for sure he's coming with all the citizens of Ayodhya to beg me to return to Ayodhya and be king. Lakshman put his head down in shame because he knew what Ram was speaking was true. Meanwhile, Bharat got down from his chariot, which had 12 horses driving it, and he went by foot with Vasishtha Muni, Maharaj Guha, and behind them was, no, actually he went by foot with Shatrughna and Guha, and behind him was Vasishtha Muni and the mothers, and behind them were the armies. Bharat went by foot. He saw some smoke coming from the mountain of Chitrakoot in a dense jungle. He understood this must be where Ram is living. He came upon a clearing where he saw a thatched hut. And there was the bow, the golden bow, which shone like rainbow. And the quivers of arrows and the swords and the sheaths that were Ram and Lakshman's hanging from the outside of that little hut. And then he saw a sacred fire burning. And beside that was Ram. He wept bitter tears, seeing his brother dressed in tree bark with matted hair, sitting on the ground. And when he saw Sita in the same condition, it was intolerable for his heart to accommodate. He ran to Ram, all three of them. But as they were running, even though it was flat ground, they were stumbling at every step. And finally, he just fell down and laid at the feet of Sri Ram, grabbing Ram's feet and putting them on his head, crying uncontrollably. Ram picked him up and embraced him. And today, for those of you who have gone to Chitrakoot, you have seen that the embrace of Ram and Bharat was so deep with affection that the rocks beneath their feet melted by the experience. Their footprints are visible even today in the rocks. And Kausalya came later on, and she embraced Sita, and the same experience took place. Ram asked Bharat, I do not understand why you have come to the forest with all these big armies, and why our father's elephant is here, but our father is not here. Bharat told that in separation from you, chanting your holy names, meditating on your divine form, our father's soul has departed. When Ram heard this, he fell to the ground weeping. And then he went and told Sita that your father-in-law is no more. And he told Lakshman, I must tell you, my brother, you are fatherless. Our father has ascended to heaven. All three of them laid on the ground crying. This should be understood in its perspective. The Supreme Lord knows better than anyone that the soul is eternal. There is no death. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna chastises Arjuna. Why are you lamenting for either the living or the dead? The soul is eternal. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us ever cease to be. The soul is unborn, the soul is undying. It's only the temporary covering of the body. So why should you lament? So why Ram was lamenting? Because Ram and Krishna are the same person in different incarnations. Ram was not just lamenting, he was weeping, crying. And so was Sita and Lakshman. And Bharat was trying to console them, because he already went through the mourning stages. Yes, the Lord knows perfectly the eternality of the soul. But still, the relationship of love between the Lord and his devotee, and the feelings of separation, is a type of transcendental ecstasy. He was showing us how to love. And he was showing us the love between him and his devotees. Hearing the crying, the mothers came. And soon the soldiers came. They all heard this crying. And Lord Ram went to the river and performed from his own hands the last rites for his father. As everyone was listening to every word in pin drop silence, Bharat begged Ram, you are the eldest son. Throughout the history of our dynasty, the throne has always been given to the king's eldest son. It is yours. Now my father is no longer the entire entire kingdom of Ayodhya has come here to beg you to return. If you think that you have to protect your father's word of honor, then just understand it this way. My mother, Kaikeyi, she's satisfied. I've already been given the position of the king. But now as the king, it is my right to give it to you. So return. But he was saying it, trembling with tears, choked up with such love. Lord Rama, he told Bharat, that in this world, things do not always go our way, because no one is the controller. Even though he was the controller, he was speaking from the point of view of us. He says, no one is the controller. There are always situations that will overcome us. Every joy, there is sorrow. With every meeting, there is imminent separation. With every gain, we know inevitably we will lose it. And with life, we know for sure that death will end it. So we must learn in this world to face all these obstacles with integrity. Our Father, He has spoken that you be king and I go to the forest for exile. It must be honored. Bharat said, our father was an illusion. Because of my wretched, envious, wicked mother, our father fell under the spell of her powers. And he did something that was wrong. Make it right, Ram, and go back. Don't let his mistake spoil everybody's life. Rectify his mistake in his honor by coming back to Ayodhya. How can I be king in place of you? Can a donkey walk with the gait of a horse? Can a sparrow fly with the elegance of Garuda? I'm nothing. You are everything. You must return. Ram preached to Bharat with very, very great affection. Do not ever criticize your mother. You do not understand that whatever she has done is for the ultimate good of everyone. I have given my word to my father that I would leave. And the integrity of my character is based on the word I've given my father. Vasishtha Muni approached. He saw that Bharat was losing the debate. Vasishtha Muni said, I am your priest. I'm a Brahmin. I'm higher than your father. And I order you to go back to Ayodhya. And Ram said, yes, I honor what you speak. But my mother and father, When I was absolutely helpless, they nursed me. They protected me. They put me to bed at night. They fed me. When I was absolutely helpless, they were there for me 24 hours a day. Do not you understand the debt that I feel toward them? Were you there at that time? Vasishtha Muni, I was just testing you, Ram. I was just testing. The dialogue went on for a long time. Many people tried to convince Ram. Everybody was trying to convince him. And Bharat was begging. Even the demigods from the higher planets were watching. And they really wanted Ram to win because they understood his mission, that Ravana and all these Rakshasas were destroying the sanctity of the planet, and only Ram could defeat them. And if we went back to Ayodhya, he would just be happy with his people. If he lived in the forest, he would have to face them. So the demigod spoke to Bharat, let him stay. This is what he wants. Let him stay. Ultimately, Bharat understood the determination of Sri Ram. All of the citizens were simultaneously joyful and despondent. They were joyful to see that Ram, who was their life, their soul, their everything in life, had such fixed determination to live by the highest principle of integrity and character, to live by the highest principle of loyalty and faithfulness. But they suffered miserably, knowing that there's no way any power could bring him back to Ayodhya. Bharat had a pair of wooden shoes inlaid with gold and jewels. And he made a vow. He said, Ram, I brought these shoes for you to coronate you as king and bring you back. But now you're not coming back. Put your feet in these shoes, and I will coronate these shoes as the king of Ayodhya. And I will be the menial servant of your shoes for the next 14 years. And myself, I will not live in a palace. If you're living in the jungle, I live in the jungle. If you grow your beautiful silken hair matted, I will grow my hair matted. If you only wear the tree bark on your body, in the next 14 years, I will wear nothing but tree bark. If you're only eating the raw, dry roots and herbs of the ground, for the next 14 years, that will be my diet. It is my vow. And you want the kingdom to go on nicely? I will perform all the services of the king as your menial servant. I'll execute all the duties, but your shoes will be the king. This is such a crucial principle for everyone on the path of devotion to understand. Bharat's expression, it must go deep in our hearts if we really want to understand what is Krishna consciousness. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught our only aspiration is to be the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of the Supreme Lord. We're not concerned with any position. We're not concerned with any title. We're not concerned with any facility. We can accept whatever we need to accept for the purpose of serving. But it's service that is our life and soul. Bharat he performed all the responsibilities necessary to rule an entire kingdom. First person ever in history that did it, living in a jungle. Because generally, to perform that service, you need the prestige, you need the palace, you need the throne. It's all part of the service. He rejected the position, rejected the title, rejected the prestige, but accepted wholeheartedly the responsibility of the service. That is the essence. And that was one of the greatest detriments in any spiritual society. That Maya or illusion captures us with this attraction, allurement for facilities. We want to utilize the facilities we're having and we become attached to them. Facilities are meant for God's service. But the tendency is we become attached. And how do you know if you're attached or not? Anyone can say, I'm detached, it's all for Krishna. Anyone can say that. Even I could say that. But the test is when you're asked to give it up. When you're asked to give up that facility by Krishna or his representatives. If we're really using it for Krishna, I'll do without it, no problem. But we're saying, no, I can't, impossible, no way. What does that mean? It means, yes, it's partially for Krishna. But you're attached for your own selfish purposes. Are we sincere? When something's taken away, then that's the test. Are we actually sincere? Are we only trying to selfishly enjoy something in the name of Krishna? And not only things, but even more powerful than that is pratishtha, recognition, prestige, title, and position. People are very attached to positions. People will lie, cry, and die for a position. And we like to say that I'm only in this position because it's It's the best thing for Krishna service. But even in the name of Krishna service, you may be in a trap of illusion. And the test is, give up your position. How will I live? How will I serve? I need this title. I need my name on the door. We should not be attached to a service. We should be attached to the spirit of service. And on the basis of people wanting prestige, honor, respect, to the degree you have those desires, it's inevitable. You will be envious of people who are potential competitors or people who have more than you. Yes? Then where is the yoga? Where is the union? There's no real yoga until we're free of envy. It's not just a matter of sitting cross-legged and doing some breathing exercises or standing on your head. Those things are good for health and good for harmonizing body, mind, and soul. But to purify the heart, to purify it so there's real unity with God and real unity with others, we have to rise above the ahankar, the false ego. Where we want to take credit for what we do. Bharat did everything for 14 years. And he did a magnificent job. He practically made no mistakes. The whole kingdom was so proud of him. But he never, ever once took credit for anything. He gave all credit to Ram's sandals. He would go every day to the throne and read the report to Ram's sandals. This is what I have done for you today. What would you like me to do for you tomorrow? And if anybody gave him any credit, no. All the credit belongs to the sandals of my Lord. He took credit for nothing. And he had no position. Although he did the service of a king, the sandals were the king. And he just remained a mendicant. That is pure devotional service. That is love. Now that doesn't mean you people in Bombay should start growing your hair matted and looking for bark from trees to wear. You wouldn't know how to put it on even if you had it. I've tried it before. I don't know how you put it on. It's very complicated, actually. But it is the spirit that is important. Why so many splits in denominations, so many factions and religious societies? And even in a society that is existing as one, there's often so much infighting and politics. Why politics? Politics are all about the false ego. People who are attached to a position. People who are attached to the prestige of that position. People who want the honor and the respect of that position and who want the facilities that come with that position. And people want to be respected for being the doer of what they do. But bhakti means liberation. Liberation from all these complications. Give credit to God. So easy, but so difficult. take this example of Bharat in the core of your heart. You may have a position that I'm the father or I'm the mother of this house. The father thinks he's the king of the house. But the mother knows that I'm the king of the house. Everyone's a servant of God. We're all servants of each other. Krishna's the king. Then there's harmony. It's like that beautiful story of Ramanujacharya, where Dhanurdas, he was a big, handsome wrestler who had a beautiful wife, so beautiful. And he became a devotee of Ramanujacharya, the great saint of South India. And his wife wore ornaments, and he had nice clothes, and he had a nice house. And Ramanujacharya gave so much attention and so much affection and so much appreciation for him. Meanwhile, the brahmacharis in the ashram, the sadhus, they were thinking, we don't get so much affection from Guru Maharaj. Guru Maharaj must be in Maya. Why doesn't he see this? It's like the noonday sun. It's obvious. We're austere. We're studying the shastras. We're sleeping on the floor. We're just wearing kopins and a little cloth on us. And we're eating whatever he gives us. And Dhanurdas, look at what he and his wife, how they're living. What guy? What's with our Guru Maharaj? Why is he giving so much affection? So Ramanujacharya understood what they were thinking. So one night, in the middle of the night, when they were sleeping, he went to their kopins and started tearing them up. Kopin is a loincloth, very simple, it's what they wear. And after they woke up in the morning, Ma! You ripped my loincloth. You're so envious of me. You ripped mine. And they were all arguing. They were fighting like anything over loincloths. Hare Krishna. Then that night, Ramanujacharya said, you know that Dhanurdas, he's too attached to his wife and his wealth and all that stuff. And they, yes, yes, yes. Correct, correct. Let's expose him. I'll call him tonight while his wife is sleeping, and you go there and steal her jewelry. And then go back and watch how disturbed they are, both are, when they found that their jewelry that they're so attached to has been stolen. The brahmacharis were really excited about this plan. So he called Dr. Dhanurdas, and while he was away, the wife was sleeping, and the brahmacharis snuck in and started stealing jewelry. And then she started to turn over, and they ran away. So then they went hiding and watched what his reaction would be. Hare Krishna. He said, why only half your face has jewelry? He said, because the brahmacharis came and stole them. she didn't say steal. She said, our Guru Maharaj must really be in a financial problem. Because the brahmachari, out of their love and devotion to Guru Maharaj, they came to just, you know, take these things. They didn't steal it. They just came to take them. And then he said, well, Why didn't you give it all of them? Why you still have half on your face? She said, well, I turned around to make it easier for them to take it, but as soon as I turned, they ran away. And he said, well, why didn't you turn slower? This is very bad. We should give everything, not half. The brahmacharis went back and reported to Ramanujacharya. And he said, oh, you see, you're taking everything away from them and they want you to take all? They want you to take it? And last night, when you had little tears in your loincloths, you were fighting about it? They understood. Real detachment is a state of the heart. Real detachment is about understanding that I am the property of God, that everything is the property of God, and that fame, prestige, title, honor, that is all in God's hands. Narayana parasarve nakutashtina vibhyate swarga pavarga narakeshu apitolyate darshana. Lord Shiva tells, what is a real devotee? In any situation, a devotee is simply happy to serve. And this is what we must try to emulate by following in the footsteps of Bharat Maharaj. For 14 years, he served in this way. And on the day when Ram returned, he immediately put the sandals back on Ram and coronated him as king and remained his servant for the rest of his life. As they were leaving Chitrakoot, Kaushalya, seeing her son Ram living as a hermit in the forest was too much. And Lakshman's mother, seeing him in that state, Kaushalya, and she just wept as they bid farewell to their sons. As everyone else was leaving, their backs were turned. Kaikeyi, the mother of Bharat, who viciously exiled Ram to the forest, she fell at Ram's feet. She was crying uncontrollably, begging forgiveness. I am ignorant. I was completely under illusion. I was a victim of envy and greed. And look at what I have done to so many people's lives. Now I'm aware of what a sinful, sinful person I am. I beg you, please forgive me. Do you remember what Ram told Kaikeyi? He said, never think like that. You're a wonderful mother, and you love me, and I love you. He said, actually, it wasn't you that exiled me. It was my plan. It was myself who induced you to do this. Because I have a great plot. I have a great plan of how to deliver this world. Kaikeyi, she understood something that hardly anyone else knew in Ayodhya. She said, I can understand now that you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You are the Lord of all the universes who has descended from the spiritual world. And Ram said, yes, I have revealed this truth to you. And whatever you have done, it is under my control. So you go home and you be peaceful and happy. And I will return in 14 years to be with you once again. Shri Ramchandra Bhagavan ki jai. The Ramayana is full of precious lessons of how to properly tread the path of pure devotional service. In this age of Kali, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in the role of his own devotee to teach by his words and example. Nadananda Jananda Sundarim Kavitam Vajagadisha Kamaye Mama Janamani Janmanishwari Bhavatad Bhakti Rahoita Kitwayi. In this one sloka, Lord Chaitanya has summarized the essence of everything we've been discussing today and unlimitedly more. The ideal of Ram's integrity, the model of Bharat's selfless service, are encapsulated in this verse. I do not want wealth. I do not want the pleasures of the senses. I do not want prestige or followers. I do not even want liberation from suffering. I only want to serve you. I don't even want liberation. Birth after birth after birth, in any situation, in any place, in any condition, I am your servant unconditionally. That is the quality of the soul. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us how to uncover that essential quality of the soul in this age through the purifying method of chanting God's holy names. If we simultaneously strive to live with these aspirations and these virtues and chant the names of the Lord, the name of the Lord is none different than the Lord. It awakens our love of God and purifies our heart. Simply by living in that service attitude, humble service attitude, without expectations, and chanting God's name in this very life, that divine love awakens from within. And the greatest of all services that we can do is to share that love in whatever we do within our life. It is for this purpose, to teach us this principle, that Lord Ramchandra descended on this day to this earth. So let us pray sincerely that we will strive to show our gratitude for his mercy by reciprocating and making it the priority of our life, however easy or difficult it may be. To have a life of substance, we must be willing to maintain the dignity of our ideals under all circumstances. And if we do that, then very quickly, love of God will appear within our hearts through the chanting of his names. Our beloved Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, he was the embodiment of all of these divine qualities. And what integrity he had, despite impossible difficulties and obstacles. The principle of compassion never waned in his character to give us the treasure of his heart, Krishna. At this time, there will be arti. This will be the special arti ceremony to celebrate Ram's appearance. He appeared at noon. So one may ask why we're having the noon arti at 9:12 at night. The answer, yoga. This is the yoga process. Should I give a purport? Yoga means unity. And Radharas Bihari Temple was having arti at 12 o'clock. And if we had competing, it would create disunity. And because they're better than us, it's proper that they should have it at the traditional time, and just to humble ourselves, to keep unity and respect, we will have it at 9:15 at night. But at the same time, the Lord appears whenever we call out for him sincerely. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.